Chapter 32. 3 days after her heart seized from too much meth, Robin Bailey's family and friends fill the church at St. Mary's. Her parents are Catholics who don't follow Ojibwe traditions about the four-day journey. Some Anishinaabes blend their religious faith and traditional Ojibwe spirituality, like adding sema to the incense during Mass. Others, like the Baileys, maintain a clear division. I sit in the pew closest to the stained glass window that has the engraved plaque honoring Grand Mary's parents and Grandpa Lorenzo's as well. My grandparents unofficially claim the pew as theirs. Mom sits alone here on Sundays now. I stopped going to Mass when I was a sophomore. One Sunday, Grand Mary likened Catholic Indians to converted Catholics, claiming that organized religion was something brought to Indians by French missionaries, so people who converted to the faith were somehow less than original Catholics. "Where do I fit into that hierarchy?" I asked her. "Don't be obstinate, Donis Lorenza. You're a Fontaine, not one of them." Every Sunday from then on, I joined Uncle David in a booth we unofficially claimed at our favorite restaurant. He realized a long time ago that, as Grand Mary's gay son, he wouldn't be admitted to the VIP section of her heaven. "The God I pray to is here with us, Donis, with you, me, and our pancakes." I'm surprised when the familiar Catholic prayers and responses come so easily from me. I'm even more surprised to find them comforting. My mind goes back to sitting with Robin in the student union after I threw my textbook at TJ Keewaydin. She was so helpful that day. "You don't have to be a superhero. Donnie, it's okay to not be okay." I only wished she had taken her own advice. I knew about her broken clavicle. It happened the same time as my first shoulder injury. The last home game of my sophomore year, Robin's senior year, an opponent slammed into the two of us like we were bowling pins, and he was going for a strike. He got ejected from the game, but not before receiving high fives from his teammates. Robin and I ended up at War Memorial Hospital. Auntie was with me because Mom couldn't handle seeing me in pain. When my aunt looked at the prescription the new doctor had written for me, she handed it back. "I'm not giving oxycodone to my 16-year-old niece," the doctor puffed in indignation. "I assure you, it's safe for short-term use." Auntie wasn't having it, telling me, "Girl, you're sticking with Tylenol and Ginigi tea." Is that how it started for Robin? A 10-day prescription of oxy and no hypervigilant auntie? Maybe her parents believed the doctor about it being safe. Maybe she didn't think she could ask for help. It's hard to let people down, and harder still when your expectations for yourself are even higher, especially knowing that some people enjoy pecking at your mistakes and flaws. No guy should have that power over you, no matter who he is, or how much everyone adores him, or how much you still want him. Who had Robin given her power to? There was something bone-weary in her sigh that day on campus. Which guy had made her feel the opposite of powerful? Had she felt there was no one on her side? Not even the guy she still wanted? Would Jamie and Ron see Robin only as an addict, or, if my suspicions are correct, as a meth dealer? They don't know her story. I don't know her story either, but I know she has one. Had one. I can try to find out and share the stories that might help the investigation. I need to be part of the investigation. The community needs to be part of the solution. The funeral home director closes the lid of the casket. Robin's mother makes a sound that is an amplified version of the one I made when I saw Lily's body. The horrible bleeding that I hadn't realized came from inside me. How many more loved ones will know this anguish before the investigation ends? After the funeral mass, Robin's uncle invites everyone to the gravesite for the burial and rite of committal, followed by lunch at Chimakwa. He also announces the benefit hockey game on Friday, 3 days from now, for the Robin Joy Bailey Memorial Foundation. Mrs. Bailey looks my way and smiles through tears. I've agreed to play on the Sioux High team. Coach Bobby first asked those of us who had been Robin's teammates on the boys' varsity team to participate before filling out the rest of the roster with current varsity players. The entire town is pitching in. Call Me Grant donated his services to set up the nonprofit foundation. Dana pledged a huge donation on behalf of the Firekeeper family. The Sugar Island Ojibwe tribe donated the full billboard in town, advertising the fundraising event with Robin's senior picture in her Blue Devils hockey jersey and leaning against her stick. It had to come together quickly, because this coming weekend is the only one without a Supes game until the league pauses for Thanksgiving break. The Superiors always take the first weekend in October off for Shagala Saturday. It's the biggest weekend all year for the town. Not just the town, it's special for me, too. My birthday is on Friday. I skip the funeral lunch so I can take Granny June to the Elder Center. Passing the little convenience store on the way to the ferry, I remember the Sema for Leonard Manitou. I'm relieved when they have a decent variety of tobacco. Auntie says the kind for rolling cigarettes is harsh on the lungs, and it's better to get the good pipe tobacco for gifts. I purchase a few pouches. When we arrive for lunch, I eagerly scan the room. A few weeks ago, Leonard mentioned the little people, just like Travis did on that terrible night. Leonard's story had something to do with being lost in the woods. Maybe he was hallucinating from the freezing cold. After a minute, my heart sinks. Leonard isn't here today. Minnie makes the sign of the cross at Granny slathering ketchup on a pasty. I eat my lunch while scrambling for a backup plan. Minnie might know what her son is doing today, but how do I ask her? My mind goes blank. Granny June and Minnie talk about how to determine if someone is fluent in Anishinaabemowin. When you can say, "There's a man sitting on a horse eating a slice of apple pie," if you can get through that, you're fluent, Granny says. "Eh," Minnie counters. "It's when you know which words are animate or inanimate because you just know which ones are alive." Johnsy and Jimmer pause while passing by to chime in. "You're fluent when you can tell the difference in dialects," Jimmer says. "It's when the language teacher says you passed the test," Johnsy says in fluent, smartass. Sini speaks up from the next table over. "You're fluent when you dream in the language." The room falls silent with a consensus of nodding heads and pursed lips. Right then, Leonard Manitou walks in. I sit up, blinking in case I'm daydreaming. He comes over to our table and drops off Minnie's prescription medicine refills. After he kisses her cheek, Leonard gets a cup of coffee but nothing to eat. He joins a table of friends. If Leonard ate somewhere else, he might not stay long. As soon as Granny June and Minnie finish, I rush to take their trays to the dishwasher area. "What's your hurry?" Granny asks. "Minnie didn't get any better at pinochle overnight." "What you don't know about cards could fill a book," Minnie retorts. After dropping off the trays, I cross the dining room. I'm nearly to Leonard's table when Auntie comes in. Johnsy shouts across the room. "Hey, Big Cheese, how much are we paying you?" Ignoring him, she grabs my arm and drags me outside. Holy shit, Auntie is pissed. "Is it true you're playing hockey on Friday?" "Yes, it's for Robin." I glance around the parking lot. "Bullshit. She wouldn't want you to risk..." "But she's not here," I snap. "That's why there's a game." Auntie narrows her eyes at me. "I don't know what's going on with you, but I'm gonna find out. You can count on that." She pokes a finger at my chest. I expect her to walk away, but my aunt is just getting started. "You're making stupid decisions. You're running around with a different crowd. You don't come around and play with the girls." She's right. I'm such a bad auntie. But she doesn't understand that I'm doing this for our community. So the twins never have to lose a friend. Or each other. I shudder at the thought. "I can't tell you, Auntie. I know I'm hurting you, but it's for your protection. You return maybe 1 in 4 texts. Your ma says you're never home. Classes are... Donna's firekeeper? Don't you dare lie to me, Auntie shouts. Is it that soup you're snagging? You're really going to be one of those girls who forgets herself as soon as she's in some guy's bed? Does my aunt think so little of me that I'm capable of losing myself over a guy? I'm not. TJ said he doesn't trust Jamie. What? I'm too stunned to respond immediately. We just stare at each other. You talk with him? After what he did to me? I hate the shrillness in my voice. Auntie takes a deep breath, but before she can say anything else, I cut her off. TJ Kuwaiten has no right to speak to me or about me ever again. There's more going on, she tries to interject. No, there isn't. I take a few steps backward. Before I turn away, I leave her with, Auntie, I thought I could trust you to always be on my side. I wait for Auntie's SUV to leave before returning to the dining room. The elders make a point of not looking at me. All they know is that Auntie yelled at me and that, knowing her, I probably deserved it. But I had yelled back. Something is shifting between my aunt and me. I don't know if it's good or bad. Maybe it's both. Hadn't Lily told me I had black and white thinking? They go about their normal activities. Granny June and Minnie play pinochle with Jauncey and Jimmer. Sini works on a puzzle but glances up periodically. When Leonard Manitou returns from refilling his makade mushkeke wabo, I'm sitting next to his seat. I slide the pouch of sema onto the dining table next to his coffee mug. Mashomis, would you please tell me about the little people? If now isn't the best time, we could meet up whenever works for you. Auntie taught me that when you gift sema and ask for something, it's good to give the person an option in case they need to think about your request. Please be ready now, I silently plead. My leg bounces beneath the table. Leonard puts a hand on the pouch of pipe tobacco and gives a single nod. My relief turns to eagerness. You said you were lost in the woods? As soon as I offer a starting point, I feel ashamed for taking it from him. My impatience got the best of me. I can hear Auntie scolding me. You know better than that, Donis. He looks up and to the side, accessing his memory files. I was 5, chasing a rabbit with my slingshot. That was good eating then. Still good eating. What I wouldn't give for some wabu snabub. As he swallows the memory of rabbit soup, I say a quick prayer that it's savory and warms him through and through. The snow came down heavy, snowflakes big as my thumb. Got turned around, but I kept walking. Figured I'd reach home or the next house. I was a quick little guy. I'm sure my mom called for me, but I was too far away. He looks out the window, lost in thought. Didn't get scared till dark. I tucked my arms into my shirt beneath my coat like this, eh? He crosses his arms and tucks his hands into his armpits. Looked for a pine tree to crawl under and lean next to her trunk. But it got so cold. You ever know cold like that? I think of shivering on the fasting boulder with my thick wool blanket and plastic tarp. Stormy's dad drumming in the distance. If I had needed to, I could have shouted to him. Someone would have come for me. My experience was not like Leonard Manitou's. I shake my head. Pretty soon the little people were there. Smaller than me, but not young like me. The stories I heard about them weren't nothing to be afraid of, hey? Little mischief makers, enjoying some shenanigans. Tying my mother's laundry on the clothesline into knots. I always like a good shenanigan, so I followed them. Came to a boulder. One of them old grandfather rocks that have always been here. I was at the rock and then I was passing through it. Traveling on a stream beneath the island, like a highway, crisscrossing I don't know where. His face lights up. We took Macy to a water park when she was a quasan. She rode down the tunnels, fearless, laughing each time she shot into the pool where her dad waited for her. Made me think back to them underground springs. My granddaughters like me. I wasn't afraid. I waited for him to say more, but not with a sense of urgency. It is enough to sit with Leonard Manitou and hear whatever he wants to share, whenever he's ready. We are on Indian time. They led me back through the rock. I heard my dad shouting for me. I called out and he found me. Gone 2 nights and 2 days, hey? I told my parents where I was. My dad said that couldn't be. But my mom and my Nokomis always left gifts for the little people. A copper thimble, tiny knitted toques, sema, bear grease medicine. Grandma Pearl left items like that outside. When Art takes care of a ceremonial fire, Auntie always fixes a small plate of food and sets it at the edge of the woods. I've always heard about the little people, but I've never paid much attention to the stories. Left your boots outside and now they're by the outhouse? That's the little people. Shoelaces tied in knots? Them little people are playing a trick on ya. Firewood scattered on the ground instead of stacked? Must have been the little people. I never heard anyone say anything bad about the little people. Until Travis. Do you think they have it in them to be malicious or get mad? I attempt to be casually curious rather than heart-poundingly, did Travis provide a clue, secret squirrel inquisitive. He thinks a while, long enough that I wonder if he forgot my question. I had a cousin who used to sniff gasoline. We'd find him passed out next to the car. One time, he said the little people yelled at him, but he kept on sniffing. I asked if they still came around to yell at him. He wasn't always there, know what I mean? Leonard Manitou taps the side of his head. He told me the last time they came around, they cried for him. He never saw them again. This was your cousin? I say. He nods. Skinny Manitou. Only his grandma called him Elmer. He could draw an idea and you'd swear it was a photograph. Damn shame. He caught himself on fire. Gasoline on him and he lit a cigarette. He shakes his head. Chimigwich, I say. Someone you know sniffing gas? I nod. Something like that.